The American Radio Newsreel, a headline-hunting expedition on the scene of action along the news fronts of the world, presenting the actual personalities who make the feature and page one news of the hour. Page one, Foreign Affairs, an exclusive interview with the head of the French Bureau of Information.
Dr. Robert Valeur, director of the French Information Bureau, is just arriving by Pan-American Clipper. His words on the war in Europe are officially representative of the opinions of Daladier's government. Dr. Valeur, just how do you believe the economic pact between Germany and Russia will affect the outcome of the war?
Some speak of the economic help that Germany can expect from Soviet Russia. But even if Soviet Russia were willing to give all the help she can to Germany, most economists agree that the only important raw material that Russia produces in large enough quantities to help supplying the needs of Germany is oil. But Russian railroads are in such poor condition that they could not possibly take care of substantial oil shipments to Germany. Although it would be wishful thinking to assume that the underground forces working within Germany for the overthrow of the Nazi regime will soon cause its collapse, it must be remembered that there are tens of millions of enslaved people within the Greater Reich who will seize any opportunity to create trouble for their oppressors. And whether it is true or not, as some have suggested, that Italy will eventually agree to some plan for letting the Allies bring pressure on Germany's Austrian front, everything points to the necessity for them to continue their present defensive policies in the West.
Doctor, does your government believe that a lasting peace ever will emerge out of the present war in Europe?
The millions who died in the World War had been told already, or sincerely believed, that they were fighting for the establishment of a lasting peace. Their sacrifice did not prevent the present conflict, and yet it may not have been in vain. The peacemakers of 1919 made the grave mistake of letting themselves be almost exclusively inspired by political motives in remaking the map of Europe. They disregarded fundamental economic facts. These were largely responsible for creating or aggravating, in many countries, the conditions which made the present conflict inevitable.
Well, of course, everyone hopes we won't repeat the mistakes of 1919. But many are afraid that there's a touch of wishful thinking in such a hope.
If this is wishful thinking, then there is no hope of saving European civilization.
Exclusive, a former Nazi propaganda official discusses Mr. A. Hitler.
Miss Elizabeth Knaust, once confidential press secretary to Adolf Hitler, takes us inside his official residence, the Reichschancellery in Berlin, for an intimate glimpse of the Nazi leader. Miss Knaust, will you tell our listeners your duties and where you worked?
In the German propaganda ministry, and I had all the files about Italy, Austria, Hungary, Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, the Vatican, and the Völkerbund.
Well,
Hitler's private archives.
Will you tell us what sort of material was in Hitler's private files of which you were in charge?
All his pictures and all his speeches, all the news, all the responses from foreign countries against and pro-Hitler, and his life before he came to power.
Well, Miss Knaust, from such close personal touch with Adolf Hitler, you must have formed an opinion about him. What kind of a man is Adolf Hitler?
Very nervous man who changes his mind almost every minute.
From having worked inside the propaganda ministry, what would you advise Americans to believe about the information coming out of Germany?
Propaganda coming from Germany, discount 100% and you have the right truth.
Coming as it does from one who can look behind the scenes, I'm sure every American will appreciate your advice. Thank you, Miss Elizabeth Knaust.
Benny Friedman gives a few tips to young gridiron hopefuls.
Benny Friedman, one of the all-time greats of the gridiron, former All-American and professional star, and present coach of New York City College, gives our young listeners a football lesson. Bill Harding is your interviewer. But first, I'd like to ask a question myself. Tell us specifically, what would you advise a young footballer to learn to avoid injury, Benny?
Well, in the first place, I've believed always that there are just three things that a boy has to learn. First, how to hit. Second, how to get hit. And thirdly, how to fall. Now, if a boy learns those three things, his opportunity of injury is brought down to a minimum.
Is there any special way or any specific words that you can use in telling a boy how to avoid being hurt, how to get hit, and how to hit?
Yes. I'd say that if a boy learns to be compact, not having any of his legs or arms stuck out either when he hits, gets hits, or when he falls, why then his opportunity of injury is limited. Furthermore, I believe that when a boy hits or get hit, why he should be as low to the ground as possible, his feet spread, his back straight, and his head up with a bull neck. If he carries that position throughout, even when he falls, he's not going to get hurt.
Many people have written in asking us to get Benny Friedman's reaction on football scholarships. What do you think about colleges subsidizing players, Benny?
Well, I've been very interested in seeing what has been said and the attitude of some of the Southern institutions in coming out very bluntly for it. It's been my personal opinion that it's only a matter of luck that makes one boy's father well-to-do enough to send him through school, and another boy having a father that is too poor to send him through. And I can't see any reason why any young man who is a deserving individual, whose grades in high school warrant him going on, having a scholarship offered to him and accepting it so that he can get his college education. I'm not in accord, though, with the idea that boys should be bought as college football players and when the college football season is over, see them disappear. I understand that a great many of the college football players, when the football season is over, are through, and that there are a number of them that do not graduate. Well, that sort of subsidization, in my mind, is not okay. I'm for the boy who wants to get an education, and through his football, gets a scholarship to enable him to get his goal, but not, as I said before, to the boy who just wants to go to school to play football.
Thanks very much, Benny. You have just heard Benny Friedman, former University of Michigan All-American and professional football star, giving helpful hints to the youngsters.
The Theater Page. A new Negro play heads for Broadway.
You've all read the famous John Henry stories written by Rock Bradford. Well, those stories are headed for the stage in a musical play named for the hero, John Henry. Backstage in the theater, where the show is in rehearsal, Eric Corkhurst interviews Mr. Bradford.
Now, Mr. Bradford, wasn't there another play on Broadway and throughout the country which was fashioned from stories of yours?
The Green Pastures?
That's it.
Yes. That was a very nice play, too.
Well, what stories were they fashioned from?
Bible stories published in a book called Old Man Adam and His Children.
Oh, yes, I remember that very well. How do you feel this play compares with it?
They're different things. It'd be hard to compare the two of them. I think that The Green Pastures was just as good in its authenticity and so forth as this one is. But it, of course, was about biblical characters as seen through the eyes of illiterate Negroes.
Thanks, Mr. Bradford. And now how about the star? An honor graduate of Rutgers University, a Phi Beta Kappa, a former All-American football player, star of radio, screen, stage, and opera. O.K. Eric Corkhurst and Paul Robeson.
Now, this isn't your first appearance on the New York stage, is it?
No, I've appeared many times. First in the Emperor Jones. Those children got wings. Showboat.
Oh, am I under the impression the part of Showboat in Showboat was written for you?
It was, but I, the show was postponed, and I had to go to Paris for a concert tour, and I was able to get to it later.
Well, that's fine. You played it both in moving pictures and on the stage, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Well, which medium did you find more satisfactory, the stage or the screen?
I prefer the stage. I found it richer and broader, though I like the screen very much.
With the combination of Bradford and Robeson, we look forward to a play as important as The Green Pastures. And thanks to you both.
The Woman's Page. Two American girls return from a sheik's harem.
The Hoffman twins, Helen and Ruth, are the co-authors of that best-selling adventure story, We Married an Englishman. Ruth, as a consequence of that celebrated marriage, is now Mrs. Brooks. Just back from a trip through Iraq, they take us behind the scenes of a sheik's harem in an interview with Bill Harding.
We'd like you to tell us something about the sheik's harem, but first, and mostly for my benefit, let's straighten out the question of which of you is which.
Well, I'm Helen, and this is my sister Ruth here. Only she married Douglas Brooks.
Thank you. I'll try and keep that straight. Now, Mrs. Brooks, would you mind telling our listeners how many wives Sheik Agil had and how he acquired them?
Sheik Agil's had a lot of wives. I don't suppose he can remember how many, but he only has three now, Sejida and Kaukab and Fatima.
How does he go about acquiring these wives?
Usually wives are bought. But the sheikh married his first cousins. Each one of his wives are his first cousins. So he doesn't pay for them. They leave the money stays in the family.
Ordinarily, what is the price of a wife?
Oh, any place from $50 up.
That sounds like a case for one of our local playboys. Miss Hoffman, at those prices, just what does a sheikh look for in a wife?
Well, first he looks for virtue, of course. And then, of course, he looks for beauty.
How about intelligence and domesticity?
Well, that goes right along with it. These women are, of course, very intelligent, though they have no education. They can't read or write. And, of course, domesticity, well, that's all they really have.
Well, that's very interesting, Mrs. Brooks. Now, which wife
is... Oh, wait a minute. I think you're a little mixed up. That was Helen that answered you. I'm Mrs. Brooks.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that you were Miss Hoffman. That's where I made my mistake.
I was Miss Hoffman.
Oh, but now you're Mrs. Brooks. By the way, did the sheik have any trouble telling you two apart?
No, I think he's had a lot of experience telling women apart.
I suppose he's had a great deal more experience than I have had. Well, first of all, I'm just going to turn over this microphone to you two ladies because I'm completely befuddled right at this point.
Well, this is Helen Hoffman speaking. You asked about the sheik's favorite wife. Well, it's Fatima, the sheik's favorite wife. And none of the others are jealous of her at all. Would you believe that?
Well, it is rather hard to believe. And how about that Fatima? Was that a cigarette plug? But to get back to the sheik, how come none of his wives are jealous?
I know why. Because he treats all the wives equal. If he has four wives or three or two, he must treat each one of them equally. If he buys one a new dress, he has to buy each one of them a new dress. Or if he buys a bracelet for one of them, he must buy a bracelet for each one of them.
That sort of hits the pocketbook when he gets generous, doesn't
That's
it?
That's why he must be wealthy.
Well, I'm sure all our male listeners can understand that. Well, thank you, Ruth and Helen Hoffman, and we'll be looking for your next book entitled Who Said Garden of Eden?
The American Radio Newsreel is produced by Eric Palm, edited by Joseph Johnstone, and released throughout the United States and Canada by Ayers Prescott Incorporated, Radio City, New York. Your announcers, James Clemenger
and Alan Barnes.